with Laura and Nicole from the Thunder Bay Public Library. This week we are doing another fun topic, which is Agatha Christie read-alikes.
Yay! Yay!
Tell us all about it.
Okay, happily. Okay, so what first inspired this is, of course, fairly recently, there was a movie released, and it was, which one was it?
Now I don't know.
Oh, Evil Under the Sun? No. Oh my goodness. Death on the Nile.
Oh yeah. We've talked about this too much at this point.
We have. We've talked about it so much we forgot what it actually was. Yeah. Yes, Death on the Nile. So Sir Kenneth Branagh, I believe.
Yeah.
So he clearly is a big Agatha Christie fan and was like, what kind of fun passion projects do I want to spend these years doing? So a couple of years back, he did Murder on the Orient Express, and he cast himself as Poirot, which, okay.
You know, I mean, good for him.
Good for him. If you're familiar with the character of Poirot, and I'm sure I'm saying it incorrectly, but that's what I'm going to say, because that's
it sounds right.
My whole life. If you read the description of the book, that is not very close to Kenneth Branagh, but you know, he wanted to be the smartest guy, so that's fine. Anyway, so the one a couple of years ago, Murder on the Orient Express, not the first time there's been a film adaptation of that, like it's been done a couple of times, but people enjoyed it, and so Kenneth Branagh was like, great, I'm gonna keep going, and he had another one. So when that came out, I was like, you know, we should do an episode about Agatha Christie read-alikes, right? Kind of highlight a couple of the perhaps slightly lesser known Agatha Christies. Mm-hmm. So not the ones that have been adapted already many times. And then talk about something that the estate of Agatha Christie is doing, and then some other authors. And then also, we're probably not gonna have time for it because there's lots of stuff. But also what I did is I went through our film streaming service that the library offers, which is called Canopy. And I did a search for Agatha Christie ones. And so you could just go on Canopy and search Agatha Christie and you'll find some of these titles. But if you want to know what we have in particular and what you could be looking for, then you can check the show notes and you'll see a little TV and movie section with all the titles that we have available.
It was a very packed information season with this one. So
yes, it's another one of Laura's passions.
Come on onto the screen.
Yeah. Okay. So what I wanted to do is highlight a couple of ones that I really enjoy. Now, the first one I want to highlight is a book that's called Crooked House. Have you ever heard of Crooked House?
I haven't read any Agatha Christie. So
we talked about this, didn't we? Okay. So this is known. It is fairly popular because it's known to be one of her personal favorites, like one of the ones that she enjoyed writing the most. Mm-hmm. And it also, part of the way the mystery plays out, it was a little, I wouldn't say controversial for its time, but it was surprising for its time, perhaps.
Okay.
Yes. So to kind of give you an idea, so if you know about her mystery stories with Poirot, she didn't just write mysteries featuring detectives. She also wrote mysteries that had, like, they were still mysteries that were being solved, but it was just by, like, you know, someone who happened to be in the house when the mystery occurred, not necessarily an ongoing regular detective character. And this is one of those where this young man and a young woman met and then were separated during wartime. And he said, I love you, but I'm not going to get engaged to you, because if we get separated and your heart belongs to someone else, that's fine. But when this is all over, I'm going to come find you and we're going to get married. And she's like, we'll see, I guess.
Very realistic.
Both of them very realistic. So the story picks up when he has, like, he's finished with his obligations and he's coming to find her so that he can marry her, is literally why he's coming to find her. Now, unfortunately, he has bad timing because her grandfather just died. It's suspicious. Clearly, very, very quickly becomes known that it was, in fact, a murder. And
no way.
And she will not marry him until everything is solved, basically, until they know exactly what happened. But everything will be okay as long as the right person did it.
Okay.
And that's how everyone in the house kind of talks about it, because in the house, Agatha Christie gives us the whole list, right? So we've got the very, you know, mesmerizing, huge character, patriarch, who is now dead. And then he has his new wife that when he was 70, he married like a 30-year-old woman. So there's her. And then, of course, he's got his two older sons, and they have, you know, they have children. So there's several generations all living in the same house. Mm-hmm. And basically, like one of the members of the household committed the murder. It wasn't an outsider.
It's sounding very much like Knives Out, which is
Knives Out. Yeah. Which
probably
is
probably very heavily influenced by her.
Yes. Yeah. So here's our guy, he comes in, he's the outsider, and he's trying to talk to people and find out. And it soon again becomes very clear to him that the right person to be the murderer would of course be the like super young new wife, young stepmother, because mm-hmm. she's kind of the outsider, right? So it's like, if she did it, perfect.
Yeah. No family drama.
No family drama. Everything's fine. But as he learns more and more complications occur, then, you know, is it going to be that simple? Is it not? What do people know? What do they not? And one of the things that is so, well, Agatha Christie was really good at writing her mysteries, of course, like doing plots and red herrings and building everything up. But mm-hmm. she's also very good at doing different kinds of characters. And our guy, Charles, he's coming in and he's trying to look at all these people and be like, which of these could be a murderer? And he realizes that they all have different kinds of ruthlessness.
Okay.
Which sounds like, what do you mean? But Agatha Christie kind of lays it out, right? This one woman is very devoted to her husband. Well, if something was threatening him, then she'd probably murder someone. Mm. And then there's someone else who was very devoted to, she's very self-involved and narcissistic, and she's ruthless enough that she, like, what would she do to be able to continue to live her life in this like lap of luxury she does and do what she wants, right? So there's all these different sort of motivations and reasons why people would do things. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously not going to tell you who did it because
spoiler.
But yeah, it's really great. One of her favorites that she wrote. Very good if you're like, you know, I would like to read an Agatha Christie, but I don't necessarily want to read one that is part of a like huge ongoing series. Like there's a ton of Perot books. I don't want to step into that. I'm going to start with a standalone. Crooked House is a good one to go with.
So you gave a good recommendation for Nicole to start with immediately.
Yes, nice. I did. Okay. So I'm not going to run through the whole background, but I'm just going to go through a couple of other lesser known little ones. So you've got her big detective names, right? Perot. You've also got Miss Marple, which is her very sweet, fluffy old lady who does a lot of like knitting and then somehow manages to draw connections between whatever murder she's encountering and then people she knows in her life. So there's Miss Marple, but then lesser known, she has the characters Tommy and Tuppence, which I spoke about in one of our recent romance episodes, yeah, where they have like the amazing banter where they play off each other. And it's just delightful. I was reading one and the Tuppence is complaining about how boring her life is. She's like, you know, 6 years ago, if I had known that I could be with you and we'd have enough money to buy things, I would have thought everything would be perfect. But as it turns out, things are boring. And he's like, oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that. And he's like, well, what if I go out and take some other woman out, you know, out to clubbing just to, would that liven things up for you? And she's like, no, because you would only see me there with other men and I would know that you weren't interested in the other woman, but you wouldn't be sure if I would be interested in the other men because women are so much more thorough about these things.
Oh my goodness.
It's just
sass.
It's so sassy, but it's so good. Like their banter is just delightful. And there's, I think most of Tommy Tuppence stories are short stories, but there's a couple that are full length. I think By the Pricking of My Thumbs is one of their full length mysteries. Mr. Parker Pine. Now I said to Nicole that I had some things to say about racism in the Christies. Now, of course, of her time, right? Which is, you know, not that we're not making allowances or, you know, forgetting that many of these depictions may be harmful, but compared to when last time I read some of these books, it's probably been like 10 years. And yeah, where I was in terms of like recognizing that sort of thing was very, very different from where I am now. Mm-hmm. So there's this character who's, he's sort of a detective and I've always really liked him. Mr. Parker Pine, again, not well known, mostly short story. I think only short stories. There's not that many of them. And his like thing is that he has an advertisement in the Times that says, are you happy? If not, come see me.
Oh,
and then he like solves people's problems.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's just charming. And he does like, you know, someone who's bored and he'll set them up to do something that is very exciting and it intersects with something another client asked him to do. Mm. Like he hires actors and gets them to, it's just really fun. And I always really liked his stories. And then I'm reading them now and I'm like, oh no,
not good.
Not good. Because like pretty much all of the conclusions he draws are, they're all based on stereotypes. Mm. Like it's either cultural stereotypes or class stereotypes, occasionally just straight up just age stereotypes, but that's like explicitly how he talks about people, that there's these types of people and this is what they need to be happy and this is what this type needs and this is what that type needs. And I was like, oh no.
Yikes.
this is not good. He's not good.
Questionable.
So, you know, I haven't yet to find myself to be one of the types, although maybe I would be at this point. Like I said, I haven't read them in a while. I'd be like one of the boring, one of the mothers who's bored. I don't know. One of these types. I never really identified with any of the ones that he was, you know, if you look at it now, or probably other people looked at it then, we'd be like, that's problematic. Well, I never really saw myself in it, so I didn't mm-hmm. notice. And now that I do, I can't enjoy those the same way. So, I mean, I'd maybe still recommend checking out one of his stories as a curiosity, because they are a different style than her others and they are fun, but yeah.
Content does not hold up.
And mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there's lots of casual racism through all of her books, but this character in particular, given that that's his whole shtick, it doesn't work. Doesn't really yeah. work very well anymore, unfortunately. Yeah, that's Mr. Parker Pine. I used to just really enjoy him, so.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
So you're
good all around.
For the people who aren't on Twitch, who didn't get to watch all of this live, we had to move locations due to staffing, so I am now downstairs in the basement. And we'll just pick up where we left off.
We will carry on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so those were some of my picks. Now, just for next section, a little bit of background. So some years ago, the Agatha Christie estate was like, I mean, I haven't read any articles, so I don't know what their particular motivation is, but I have to assume it came down at a certain point to money.
More than
Let's
likely.
Get some more books. So they decided to have a current author write some new Hercule Poirot books. And there's been, I think, three published so far, three or four. Do you want to tell them about it?
I can. Let me see which one we started with. I think the first one, nope. Okay, I see it.
Nope, we did number two.
Right?
Nope. Those are, that is an actual Agatha Christie.
I see. Mm-hmm. Wait, which one? Oh, I see. Okay, so it's called Closed Casket. By Sophie Hannah. So I'll read the description for you and then I'm sure you will tell us a little bit more that you know of. Okay.
What?
No way. With these words, Lady Anthelinda Playford, one of the world's most beloved children's authors, springs a surprise on the lawyer entrusted with her will. As guests arrive for a party at her Irish mansion, Lady Playford has decided to cut off her two children without a penny and leave her vast fortune to someone else, an invalid who only has weeks to live. Among Lady Playford's visitors are two strangers, the famous Belgian detective Hercule, how did you say it, Poirot?
I say Hercule Poirot, but...
All right. Mm. And Inspector Edward Catchpool of Scotland Yard. Neither knows why he has been invited until Poirot begins to wonder if Lady Playford expects a murder. But why does she seem so determined to provoke a killer? And why, when the crime is committed, despite Puro's best efforts to stop it, does the identity of the victim make no sense at all? Okay.
Why?
Yes.
Couldn't tell ya.
So I read this one rather than the first one that she wrote, for the simple reason that this was the one that was available on Cloud Library. So,
nice.
Yes, you don't have to read them in order, just like honestly any of the Hercule Poirot stories, you don't have to read them in order. But anyway, so this one, what I found was that it almost felt a little bit like this author was, she was so afraid of people being like, oh, it's just like a caricature of the character, right? Mm-hmm. Like she wanted to avoid that so much that she didn't include a lot of things that are characteristic of him. And in so doing, just kind of like flattened out the character and made them more boring.
Oh.
You know, like one, he's got lots of like, lots of different little characteristics and things, probably some of the expressions that you've heard, but one of those things where you're like, you don't know exactly where it comes from. Talking about like the little gray cells.
Okay.
Little gray cells of the brain. That's a Perot thing.
Oh.
And he likes to, And he's like, unlike some other detectives in fiction, he is extremely aware of how smart he is. Super arrogant, always talks about how like he is the one who's going to figure everything out. And
what
that like arrogance is part of his character, you know, like it's part of who he is. And then we don't really get that in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like the characters in the plot, that's wholesale new. And then also the Scotland Yard guy is also a new character that this person, that Sophie Hannah came up with. And what I found in the end, I know very high standards, right? But I was like, it's not even that it's like, oh, it's no make of the Christie. I felt like it just didn't even feel like it was a Perot mystery.
Oh,
you know?
Well, if you change the character that much.
Right. So I found that kind of disappointing. But having said that, I'm just one person. And lots of other people did find it to be, you know, like they found it to be close enough in the spirit of that they enjoyed it as Agatha Christie fans looking for something new. So try it out yourself, I guess, is my advice there. It may work for you.
Give it a shot. Because, I mean, if you do like it, then you're going to like, you have a whole series to go into. But if not, no harm, no foul.
Okay, so our next section is our actual non-Agatha Christie book, our couple of read-alike mysteries. So kind of what we were looking for read-alikes for Agatha Christie, like she's obviously really, really well known for her plot. That's the big thing a lot of the time, is how the different pieces work together. There's lots of red herrings, you know, twists and turns and the clues. And she's very good. Actually, this reminds me, one thing I didn't like about the last book is that Agatha Christie is very good about making, like giving you all the information that you need to solve the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it is solved, you kind of are stuck yourself being like, why didn't I put that together? Like some not very good mystery writers, right? It'll end up, there'll be some coincidence or some information that they knew, like that the character knew, but you didn't know. So how could you have ever solved it? But Agatha Christie was very good about giving you all the pieces. And so you have no one to blame but yourself for not being as smart as she is, I guess.
She's schooled you.
Yes, very clever. Anyway, so these are books that, mysteries that are very much focused on the plot of the thing.
Mm-hmm. I think you're pink, but did you want me to do the first one?
Am I?
Well, I did the last one, which was highlighted green.
You did. Okay. I'll do this next one. So this author is Canadian, very well known, huge bestseller. We're not, like, this is not a new read-alike suggestion, but I included it because it's kind of a classic one. So this is, the author is Louise Penny. This is book one in her Chief Inspector Armand Gamache series, Still Life. The discovery of a dead body in the woods on Thanksgiving weekend brings the inspector and his colleagues from the Quebec to a small village in the eastern townships. Gamache cannot understand why anyone would want to deliberately kill well-loved artist Jane Neal, especially any of the residents of Three Pines, a place so free from crime it doesn't even have its own police force. But Gamache knows that evil is lurking somewhere behind the white picket fences, and that if he watches closely enough, Three Pines will start to give up its dark secrets.
Ooh.
So, yeah, very much small community. The outsider comes in, and wouldn't you know it, there's more occurring than seems on the surface.
Yeah, doesn't have their own police mm-hmm. force.
And there's yes, there's a bunch of books in this series.
Oh, I didn't realize
and
it was a series.
It follows. Oh yeah, and it follows like the guy, the detective. So then that way also similar to Perot.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay. Well, our next one is. Would you pronounce it 1,222 or 1222?
In my head, it would be 1222
or 1222.
But whatever you prefer, I guess. Okay. 1222.
I'll do 1222 because it's shorter.
Okay. Sure.
So this is 1222 by Anne Holt, and this is the eighth of a series. And it's the cover says the Scandinavian phenomenon. So it's going to be good. So this is the story of how a small group of people find themselves stuck in a hotel during an apocalyptic snowstorm. Following a dramatic train derailment in Fines, the conflict between survivors escalates while a furious hurricane threatens the unprotected village. So we've got a snowstorm, we've got a hurricane, and a train derailment. Nobody is there
Hello.
To help. I know, that's a lot going on. nobody is there to help, and there is no way out of the inferno for the survivors hiding out. On the first night at the hotel, a man is found shot and murdered. The victim is Cato Hammer, a priest known nationwide for his ability and desire to get in the papers. Hannah Wilhelmsen, who is the main character, retired inspector at the Oslo police, is drawn into a race against time, a murder, and the worst storm in the Norwegian Alps on record. She loses the first round. Soon another of God's servants is murdered when an icicle cuts through his body. I have to say, icicle through the heart is a very good weapon. Because if it melts,
yes,
how you ever find it?
They'll never know. Mm-hmm. They'll never know. Yeah, it's great. That's a good one. sounds sort of like, I mean, it depends on how much they're able to get out. Sounds a little bit like our closed circle mystery yes. episode. This one might fit in there that. As well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We'll just merge two of Laura's things, the Agatha and the closed circle.
Technically, the closed circle was kind of born out of Agatha Christie's, so True. It's not that surprising.
There you go. Love it.
Yes. Okay. Our next one is, this is one I found in our library, and it's short stories, In the Shadow of Agatha Christie, classic crime fiction by forgotten female writers, 1850 to 1917. And it's an anthology. So it's funny because like there's this weird tone to this description that's kind of like, I'll read it and then you can tell me what you think of it. Okay. So it's like Agatha Christie's the world's best-selling mystery author. It was so great. Everyone thinks she's amazing. It's the first paragraph basically. And then the truth is that was due to the success of writers like Anna Katharine Green in America, L.T. Meade, C.L. Purkiss, the Baroness Orgsky, and Elizabeth Corbett in England, and Mary Fortune in Australia, that the doors are finally open for women crime writers. Authors who follow them, such as Patricia Wentworth, Dorothy Sayers, and of course Agatha Christie, would not have thrived without the bold, fearless work of their predecessors, and the genre would be much poorer for their absence. So while Agatha Christie may still reign supreme, it's important to remember that she did not ascend that throne except on the shoulders of the woman who came before her and inspired her, and who are now removed from her shadow for once and for all by the superb new anthology.
Wow, someone has a I bet you that every time someone's like, oh, Agatha Christie, she just, you know, revitalized the genre, and she's like, no, she stood on the backs of all these authors. Like, they sound it's bitter.
I know, it's so weirdly resentful.
Yeah, like, is it one of the authors that it feels like it's like the ghost of one of the authors that got like that came before Agatha is just like, you should read this book.
I can't believe it. Yeah, she would never have thrived without me.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is such a weird tone.
Yeah.
I don't have any comments about the actual content of the book. I haven't read yet.
And the removed but from I just her had shadow. To, okay.
Right? Once and for all. So, yes, I haven't actually read it yet, but I had to I had to include this one because that was just such a weird, it was just such a weird description.
Someone
and they probably
this.
Are genuinely really good mysteries.
Yeah.
I have it at home.
Oh, okay. When you do, let us know. I was going to say, someone read this and send us a comment about what you thought of it, because I'm so curious what the tone is in the book.
Can you imagine?
Because it's got to be its own stories.
Well, it is. It's all, they're like stories by these women, right? It's just an anthology. So like, is the introduction just this woman like
I hope so. The Christina, I hope so. That'd be so funny. What a thing to be.
I read it and I'm just.
Sorry.
Well, yeah. I imagine though I read it and I come back and I'm like, actually, they were all pretty weak. You are not that good.
There's a reason Agatha reigns supreme. I just think that's such an interesting premise. Like, you're like in the shadow of Agatha Christie, and you're like, the whole thing is like about Agatha. Anyways, that's so interesting. Yeah. Usually we're not negative on this show, but that description is kind of hilarious.
It's so weird. I mean, the book itself is very probably great. You know,
oh, absolutely.
But this person, we're going to get hate mail. From Leslie.
Our first being like, hate mail?
She's gonna be like, I can't believe, how dare you take this lightly, it's so serious. anyways
let's move on to I'm green, I forgot.
You are green, but I'm not sure how much time we have. Do we want to each do one more maybe?
Yeah, sure. Which one's more interesting?
I would maybe, do you want to do Murder at Hotel 1911?
Sure. I'll do the other
further down
one. Yes. Okay.
The other green one, because it sounded kind of fun.
Okay. I will do that. Okay. Murder at Hotel 1911. We're just throwing out numbers the way we feel like it today. By Audrey Keown, I think. A hotel clerk prone to panic attacks turns amateur detective in this elegant and atmospheric murder mystery. If you want to spend a night amid the luxury and charm of the early 20th century, book a room at the Hotel 1911. You'll find 28-year-old Ivy Nichols, the main character, behind the reception desk. The hotel is Ivy's only link to the family that abandoned her when she was a small child. Now, plagued by panic attacks, she pedals her sea green Schwinn bicycle to work every day, hoping to desperately hold on to her job. When wealthy, imperious Ms. Swain arrives at the hotel and belittles Ivy, the young woman seeks consolation in the welcoming kitchen of George, the hotel's chef. Despite her tormentor's barbs, she dutifully informs George that Ms. Swain has a deadly allergy to shellfish. So when Ms. Swain collapses at dinner and dies, the police suspect that the chef made a tragic, inexcusable error. Desperate to save George's career, Ivy sets out sleuthing. She learns that numerous people in and around the hotel have had motives to contaminate Ms. Swain's plate. Among them are Jeffrey Swain, the victim's son and heir, painter Rose Jewett, and British expat Hemal Sandeep. Even after the police find traces of shellfish in George's kitchen, Ivy is determined to clear her friend's name, but the stress of the investigation in a hotel filled with suspects threatens to precipitate another terrifying panic attack, or something more deadly. Wow.
Sounds fun, right?
It does sound fun. And another...
Good times.
And another person that's just like, I don't normally solve crime, but I'll do this one.
Yep. Yes, very much so.
I like it.
She got pulled in. And another, like, the whole, like, someone dying and then, oh, they're rich. Mm-hmm. Probably someone murdered them for their money. That's a whole,
that's
a very common plot point. As one does. I mean, it seems like real treacherous to be a wealthy person in England, anyway, based on all these, like, British mysteries.
Yeah, you don't want
because
that.
Because someone's coming for you. You know, like, you got to be careful.
Don't reveal any weaknesses because they could come at you for your shellfish allergy.
Don't reveal any weaknesses, and don't, you know, make sure everyone knows the contents of your will.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the police know who to look at when you die.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
Okay. All right. So one more. This is another series. The series is called Her Royal Spyness.
Cute. Funny.
Cute. Light, right? Mm-hmm. And this book is called Queen of Hearts. It's by Rhys Bowen. Okay. Lady Georgiana Ranach, 35th in line for the British throne, knows how to play the part of an almost royal, but now she's off to Hollywood, where she must reprise her role as sleuth or risk starring in an all too convincing death scene.
Oh.
My mother, the glamorous and much married actress, is hearing wedding bells once again, which is why she must hop across the pond for a quickie divorce in Reno to offer my moral support. And since all expenses are paid by her new hubby-to-be Max, I agree to make the voyage with her. Crossing the Atlantic with adventure in the air and wealthy men aboard, Mother all but forgets about Max and matrimony. Matrimony?
Yeah.
Especially when movie mogul Cy Goldman insists on casting her in his next picture. Meanwhile, I find myself caught up in the secret investigation of a suspected jewel thief. Lucky for me, this description is getting
first
pretty
person.
Like, corny. It is, and like this next line is kind of over the top. Okay, lucky for me, the lead investigator happens to be my dashing beau, Darcy.
Wow.
Just happens to be. Mother's movie and Darcy's larceny. That's hard to say.
Darcy's
Mother's movie
larceny.
And Darcy's larceny.
Yeah.
Lead everyone to Cy's Hollywood home, where the likes of Charlie Chaplin are hanging about and there's enough romantic intrigue to fill a double feature. But if we hardly get a chance to work out the sleeping arrangements before Cy turns up dead, as if there wasn't enough drama already.
It sounds like a journal entry. I love it.
It does. Not going to pretend that this necessarily has very much tone in common with an Agatha Christie.
No.
But the complicated plot, all the characters, and the fact that it happens in someone's home where there's mm-hmm. different people in and out, that's the manor mystery is a very common characteristic, certainly.
I guess that's a good way to like stand out, is to make your tone significantly different, especially like if it's written like this description is, it might be kind of fun to, like a lot of times when you're reading those kinds of stories, you're getting a third person perspective. So this one, you're literally discovering clues as the main character is, rather than hearing it or seeing it from other people's perspectives. But it sounds fun. Just sounds light.
It does. Sounds fun. Sounds light. And then there's a murder. So,
you know, just, it is what it is.
You know, it's what it is.
That being said, Laura mentioned at the top that we've got a list of movies and TV series that are available on Canopy if you want to go check those out. And we also on our blog page, as per usual, tbplofftheshelf.com, you can see the previously wrecked books and all of these ones and the TV show list that Laura has so graciously written up for us. And I think we should end this filming day. It's been a bit chaotic.
But I will say, from like mystery readers, this episode has it all.
The creme de la creme.
Deep dive into the Agatha Christie mysteries.
Yeah. All right. I'll wrap us up. Thank you everybody for watching, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Make sure to check us out on all socials at TBAPL. Go check out our blog, and we will see you all in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.